Hi, I'm Lisa Prather, and welcome to The Voice of Health with our host, Dr. Robert Prather of the Prather Practice, where lives are changed every day through the natural approach to healthcare.
Well, today we're talking about tis the season for flu. Tis the season for flu. And it sounds kind of like Scrooge, doesn't it?
Tis the season for the holidays, but not necessarily for the flu.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the flu's definitely a problem at this time of year.
Yeah, and people are busier and not eating as well. And
well, actually, flu is a what they call a seasonal disease.
Mm, okay.
This is actually November.
Mm-hmm.
Is when it starts. It actually gets worse in the end of December. Through February, though it can continue all the way through May.
Now, it's really December, but...
Okay, yeah. Well, you know, end of December
right.
is when it really begins in earnest, you know, about Christmas time.
Okay.
And then it goes through February is usually the worst time of the season in North America. Now...
So we're not even there yet.
Yeah, not even there yet, but this is the beginning of it.
Mm-hmm.
This is the time where they recommend that you get the vaccinations. The interesting thing is in the southern hemisphere, it's actually during the summer.
Mm,
so it's opposite.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not really quite sure why it works that way, but during the cold time, whenever there's the colder times,
mm-hmm.
Is when the flu season, and it alternates between the southern hemisphere and the northern hemisphere.
So our time, it starts... around the end of December,
right,
and the worst part of it is in February,
right. Whereas in
that's when we'll be in Florida, hopefully,
right. Whereas in the southern hemisphere, it's during the July, those times,
okay,
which is actually their winter time.
So, what are the symptoms of flu?
The symptoms of flu, you get fever, cough, sore throat, runny or stuffy nose. Muscle or body aches, headaches, and fatigue are basically the symptoms that are associated with that.
So how do you know, is it a cold? You know, is it flu? How do you know which it is?
Well, people talk about that. You know, that's one of the big things. Do I have a cold or do I have a flu? And there is a definite difference between the two, though both of them are caused by viruses. They're both upper respiratory. So they affect the lungs and the nasal passages, but the flu hits you like a freight train,
mm-hmm.
whereas a cold kind of comes on gradually and is mild. So and if you're achy all over, feeling very fatigued, that's more likely the flu than the cold.
How can we catch the flu?
Well, the flu is extremely contagious. If someone coughs or sneezes, it's about as much as a 6-foot radius.
Wow.
That's actually going to spread around.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very, very contagious. You pick it up very quickly. You get about you're contagious about a day before you actually get the symptoms. And then you're also contagious about 5 to 7 days after that. Though if you have a compromised immune system, you might actually be sick even longer.
Mm.
You become sick after an exposure in about 1 to 4 days, but usually about 2 days.
Okay.
Is,
and that 6-foot radius, I mean, that, that's pretty close. And, they talk about when you're on the plane and a lot of things.
Yeah, it can even be even farther depending on how hard the person sneezes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically water droplets that come from the cough or from the sneeze.
Mm-hmm.
So that, and you looked at me funny when I said how hard you sneeze.
Right.
Well, why is that?
Because your sneezes make me jump. I don't even know they're coming.
So it's a very easy type of thing to pick up. It's extremely contagious, those are the you really have to be careful during that time.
Is the flu dangerous?
The flu itself usually doesn't cause people to, die or have really big problems. It's the secondary problems that actually kick in. When you have the flu, the lungs back up. You can actually get pneumonia, which is one of the more dangerous types of things, which is a secondary bacterial infection. You can also get some ear infections, sinus infections, dehydration. If you already have medical conditions, they can get much worse. If you have diabetes, your blood sugar is usually worse. If you have any type of liver or kidney problems or anything else like that, then it can also get worse too.
So who is most at risk? Is it the elderly population? I know you talked about compromised immune system.
Yeah, what they say is that people, kids, young kids between 6 months and 59 months are actually very much at risk. So younger kids. Mm-hmm. Also, older populations are definitely at risk. People who especially have asthma. When you already have a compromised lung system and you get an upper respiratory system infection, then asthma can actually complicate that. And most people who wind up hospitalized or in trouble with pneumonia also have some prior lung conditions. Asthma would be a definite problem. Cardiovascular disease is another different type of problem.
Why is that?
If you have a low-functioning heart, then that actually helps to back up the, weakens the whole system, backs up the lungs again. So if you have a cardiovascular problem, then you automatically have some problems with the lungs. Any type of kidney disease, the risks for having the flu become much, much greater. Any type of liver, neurological diseases. Also, if you have MS, Parkinson's, anything like that, you can actually develop more problems with the flu than the normal person. And as I said today, also is that diabetics also have more of a problems with the flu. Also, if you have any type of immune suppression or you're taking any types of drugs for autoimmune diseases, that actually creates a much more risky type of situation. Pregnant, if you're pregnant, that is one of the things that increases your risk for developing complications from the flu. Any child that's on aspirin and they get the flu, then they could get the Reye syndrome, which is something that you need to be careful of if for some reason your child is on aspirin. Mm-hmm. And gets and has the flu, and if the child has the flu, you certainly can't give them aspirin. Mm-hmm. Got the fever, because then you can actually develop some real problems. Any type of person who nursing, anything that's sort of like a crowded type of area. One of the things is that the Spanish flu actually started with all the soldiers who were all crowded together.
Yeah.
Nursing homes are very, very much susceptible to flu just kind of going through it very quickly. And oftentimes a lot of people are immune compromised in there. Also, American Indian and Alaskan natives don't have a natural immunity to the flu.
Oh, interesting.
Because it was basically the flu was a... Eurasian disease. And so we've had generations after generations who've been able to develop an immunity to the flu, whereas the people of the Americas weren't. So there's a big thing. And then also obesity also gives a greater risk for the flu.
Why is that?
That's a very good question, and they were actually discussing that, why that might be. They don't know if it's because of greater stress on the lungs or the cardiovascular system, because of the obesity or some of the other types of issues. But anyone who has a 40% BMI of 40 or above is much more susceptible to problems that occur with the flu.
So why is there a flu season? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that's you know, scientists have been studying that mm-hmm. on why that is. Now, one of the interesting philosophies on that is it's when we don't have as much sunshine. Mm-hmm. So, which actually affects the vitamin D levels.
Yeah.
And so they think that there's a very strong correlation between how much sun you get and people's susceptibility to the flu, and that's why there's a flu season on that, and why it switches from north to south.
Because of less
sunlight. Yeah.
Interesting. Do those lights, in fact, we have one at home that I pull out.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what you call that. So you, it's kind of, it creates light.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And I put my face there because I do get the...
Get the whole thing on it.
The winter.
I don't think it really increases your vitamin D levels.
Okay.
It helps with the pineal gland.
Okay.
Which helps with a lot of the hormones of happiness.
Because
the sun actually creates happiness, which is interesting.
Yeah. I notice a big difference when the sun's out and when it's not.
Yeah. So there is a strong correlation on that. And so, yeah, the philosophy on that is vitamin D might be one of the big keys.
Mm-hmm. And we talk about vitamin D because people aren't always getting their levels checked.
Right.
It's very important to get your levels checked and know where they're at before taking massive doses of vitamin D because it's a fat-soluble vitamin.
Right.
Right.
Right, right. Very important, both before and during while you're taking vitamin D, just to make sure your levels don't go too high.
Right. When we come back, we're going to talk about the flu vaccination.
You can win a free 60-minute massage in a relaxing spa at the Prather Practice. Each month, we have a drawing to give away a free massage to one of our lucky Facebook and Twitter fans. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter on our website at thevoiceofhealthradio.com. This is The Voice of Health with Dr. Robert Prather. The Voice of Health Wellness Tip with Dr. Robert Prather of the Prather Practice. What conditions can be helped with acupuncture?
Well, of course, the sinusitis, tinnitus. We've had some very severe cases of that came in and had some excellent results. Toothache is excellent. PMS, menopausal symptoms. I have many women who are coming in saying, you know, I've heard that it's excellent for hot flashes. Did some acupuncture, and they said, wow, I'm sold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because of the changes that occur with that. Headaches, migraines, acupuncture is an excellent adjunctive to that. Parkinson's disease. I have patients who are coming in with Parkinson's.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And actually getting some very excellent results.
You can see their gait gets better.
Sure. There are certain points that we do that are specifically have been shown to be very effective for Parkinson's. I know the National Institute of Health is doing some research on that right now with some very excellent results. I've gotten the points from their research that they've done, started to implement them, and I have definitely found that that's been extremely helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Stroke, post-stroke, we can get some very good results on that.
Mm-hmm.
Cancer patients, a very interesting study that they did on people who were going through chemo radiation, that they had 80% fewer complaints if they were doing acupuncture.
Mm.
So
when they were going through the
when they were
cancer
going
treatment.
Through it. Also afterwards, you know, there are problems with the nervous system afterwards. All addictions, cigarette smoking, we have a lot of people coming in for that. But acupuncture, specifically working on also some ear points along with that, along with the needle points on the body, actually can have some very, very significant improvement on really almost any addiction. I have a patient who comes in, came in just to try acupuncture, was actually in law school, and a lot of stress, a lot of things involved with that. And he just keeps on coming in because he says, I do so much better in school.
Mm.
You know, I'm able to concentrate better. I'm able to relax. It just makes such a difference. There was a gal, whenever she was going through the whole CPA program.
to get certified. And every time she takes tests, she comes in for acupuncture.
Before the test or
Yeah,
after?
She says it's better than Valium, you know, just to, you know, kind of keep everything nice and calm and I can think great.
Schedule your appointment at the Prather Practice, 317-848-8048. That's 317-848-8048. Or learn more on our website at thevoiceofhealthradio.com. The Prather Practice, restoring hope. You're listening to The Voice of Health with Dr. Robert Prather of The Prather Practice, the most comprehensive wellness center in the Midwest.
Well, we're talking today about 'tis the season for flu, and we're entering December. Mm-hmm. And you said the flu season on the Northern Hemisphere starts from the end of December.
Well, the height of it.
The height of it, okay.
Right. Through February. It actually starts in October.
Okay.
And
okay.
And goes through May.
So the height of it is?
The height of it is between the end of December and February.
Okay, it's thanks for that clarification.
Right.
Yeah, because to me it seemed like we're at the height of it, you know?
We are getting patients in with the flu right now.
In fact, the first time in years, I did get the flu.
Yes.
And we treated it here, and we'll talk about that, because I really just had one bad day.
Right.
One bad day. So
yeah, you weren't feeling well and said, hey, I need to get checked, and... And sure enough, it was the flu. So we got you on some products, and you got over it real quick.
Yeah, it was great. Natural products, right. Homeopathic for the flu.
Right.
It's called the Flu Be Gone.
Right.
And that's what it did. And also just making sure that I'm taking care of myself and getting to bed earlier.
Right.
You know, exercising, not overdoing it, though, and...
Sure.
Getting enough rest. So, yeah, one bad day with the flu is, I'll take that. So, let's talk about vaccinations. Let's talk about the flu vaccine. Mm-hmm. Should a person get the flu vaccine? And does it help?
Of course, it's recommended by the Center for Disease Control, World Health Organization, as something that you're supposed to do. You know, the question is whether it's right for you.
Mm-hmm.
And for some people, the flu vaccine is right, and some of the people it's not. And there are certain, of course, we talked about those who are most susceptible to it.
Yes.
You know, those are the ones that are at highest risk. If you have a compromised immune system, if you have a lot of the different types of things that are going on, if you live in a rest home,
mm-hmm.
You know, that would increase your risk for having the flu. If you're a teacher teaching kids in school, then, mm-hmm. of course, and you're older, then... So, again, it's there's different gradients of who should actually get the flu shots and who shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
For myself, I don't get the flu shot. It's something that you know, we get a lot of people coming in with the flu, so I'm exposed to it every year, mm-hmm. on a regular basis, but have not actually had the flu since I was in high school.
Mm. That was a long time ago.
Oh, thank you. It doesn't seem that long ago.
Just wanted our listeners to know that was a long time ago. So are vaccines effective?
Last year, actually, they were very pleased with how effective the vaccines were, and they said they were about 47% effective.
47%?
47.
And they were pleased with that, okay.
Yeah, actually, that was a pretty good number.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you have to pick out, there are literally thousands of different flus out there.
Right.
Of different variations. And so what they do is the World Health Organization does a study, and they check to see for this year, mm-hmm. is they watch the Southern Hemisphere on what was the most common.
Their flu season is
during the summer,
uh-huh.
during, you know,
our summer.
Our summer.
Mm-hmm.
And so they looked at that and then extrapolated from that what were the most common flus that would probably come to the northern hemisphere. And then they do the opposite for the other one. So they make a recommendation for each group by studying the other hemisphere before.
How's that panned out?
It's there are actually some years where they didn't even come close. It was kind of a waste of time, more of a risk type of thing, without any benefit. So it sometimes works out great. And last year at 47%, they were actually very, very pleased. So that gives you a little bit of an idea. Along with that, one of the things is that they had the nasal spray flu vaccine. And the Center of Disease Control has actually come out and said it doesn't work this year.
The nasal spray.
The nasal spray. Okay. So if someone recommends that you get the nasal spray, because that's actually more recommended, especially for older people, don't bother. You might as well not get it, because it's not going to work. Now, the other ones, the inactivated influenza vaccine and the recumbent influenza vaccine, they're both shots. They do say that they are working at this time, but, you know, at about a 50% clip.
Okay. And when you say they, is this the
Center of Disease Control?
Okay. And which ones are they saying that?
If they give you a shot, then it probably will work.
Okay. 50%.
About 50%. Yeah, that's what they're kind of estimating.
Okay.
At this point, but one of the things that can occur is that the virus can just shift just like automatically, and right now, as of this week, it seems to be effective.
Okay.
But things could change.
So if someone's vaccinated for the flu, could they still get the flu?
Yes. Matter of fact, if you were vaccinated, you had about, and you were exposed to the flu, there was still about, it helped about 50% of the time.
Okay. So how effective, well, you said this year's vaccine.
Again, kind of follows the
same. Do they name the flu that they're?
Yes, actually, quite interestingly. I don't know if people are really interested in that, but they have all sorts of different names for them. And the H1N1, of course, the H and the N1 are antigens that they can identify. The reason they call it H1N1 because it was the first H and N antigens that they actually identified, so they numbered them from then on.
And that one's been around for a long time.
That was actually the Spanish flu one.
The Spanish flu, okay. Been around a long time.
Yeah, it is, yes, 1918. And they call it the California H1N1 because that's where they discovered it.
Okay.
And then they also have an H3N2 Hong Kong flu in there, which they also found was a factor. And then they also have the B because those are Haemophilus A's, influenza, and this is a B. And that one they have a Victoria, which is a Brisbane one. And then in the inactivated, the quadrivalent one, they also have a Yamagata flu in there, too.
Oh, I like that name.
Isn't that a cool one?
Yeah.
So
a lot of these were in the Southern Hemisphere in our summer.
Right.
Those
were the
researched.
Most common ones. Now, there was, again, an awful lot of other flus that were active during that time that, you know, that they didn't put in. So these were the most common ones.
Okay.
So, you know, you've got all sorts of different types of factors in there. So you're still, you know, you get that, and what you're doing is you're saying, well, these are the most common ones that are probably going around, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's actually going to help with that particular one.
Yeah, so there's just a risk or a...
Yeah, I mean, it's smart to also take care of yourself and not just rely on the vaccine. Just because you've been vaccinated doesn't mean that the particular that you are
immune to
the one that's actually going to hit you, and then you can still catch it with that. It just means that you can handle it better.
Is the vaccine safe? Is the flu vaccine safe?
That is a really, really good question. And there's a lot of, obviously, different types of ideas on it. One of the most common things that can occur with the vaccination is ORS. I like that. You know, the CDC, if you got a name like CDC, you love acronyms. It just seems to be just something that you want to find as many acronyms as possible. And that's for ocular and respiratory symptoms. And what happens is you get red eyes, cough, wheeze, chest tightness, difficulty breathing, sore throat, and facial swelling, usually within 2 to 24 hours. But it's not an anaphylactic type of reaction, but it seems to be a rather common type of thing that can occur.
So you're saying after the flu vaccine's given,
then if those things occur. And they also say if you get that, then you shouldn't get another flu shot.
Okay.
So that would be...
Ever. Okay.
The OIRS, then your chances of actually having other different types of problems that come from the flu vaccination is much higher. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, of course, that you need to really watch out for is the Guillain-Barré syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
I have taken care of quite a few patients that have had that from the flu vaccination. Mm. And interestingly enough, of course, there's all sorts of different types of things that occur with that. None of them are very good. I had two patients actually who had Guillain-Barré who were in wheelchairs, and then two that had lost the use of the arm that that the shot was put into.
Mm.
So, you know, and interestingly enough, one thing that they actually found is that Guillain-Barré in combination with the actually occurs with the vaccination with multiple infections that you're carrying around. Specifically, the most common infection that seems to kick off Guillain-Barré with the vaccinations is Campylobacter, which is a intestinal GI tract infection.
Mm.
So there seems to be a very, very notable connection on that. So if you do have been identified with some especially intestinal or lung infections that you seem to be chronically carrying, then your chances of getting Guillain-Barré are actually much, much higher. So that's important for people when you get the vaccinations.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you also have thimerosal reactions, which is the preservative that they put in there, the mercury, the aluminum, those types of things that people can have problems with. And then you also have the anaphylactic reactions. The anaphylactic reactions are where you get hives, where you get even like bruises over your body, wheezing, swelling of mouth, tongue, throat, difficulty breathing, vomiting, hypotension, decreased levels of consciousness, and then you go into shock. The Guillain-Barré can happen as many as 6 weeks after the vaccination.
Oh, wow.
Which is important to, yeah, because one of the things that some of the guys were saying was that the doctors were saying, well, it happened way too late. It's like 4 weeks afterwards. But no, it's very common for that to happen as many as 6 weeks after. Matter of fact, it usually doesn't happen right away, but happens later.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but the anaphylactic reaction happens within minutes or within 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the things that you need to be aware of. There are risks for certain people for not taking the flu vaccination, and there are risks for people who do take it. So, again, it should be more of an individual type of decision on whether you take it or not.
Yeah, so who shouldn't get the flu shot?
Well, who shouldn't get the flu shot is, one, of course, anyone who has had any type of reaction. Especially on the OIRS is a indication that the next time you could actually develop a anaphylactic reaction, Guillain-Barré. That's sort of a warning sign that's not really taken that seriously by a lot of people or doctors.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to point that out, that that's kind of like a sign that probably you shouldn't do the flu shot again.
Mm-hmm.
If you have egg allergies, that would certainly be something that you would not want to do the flu vaccination. And if you're carrying multiple infections, especially GI infections or upper respiratory infections, I would also stay away from it too. Those would be things that probably wouldn't work well.
Okay. When we come back, let's talk about ways we can prevent getting the flu.
Listen to the Voice of Health Radio on your smartphone or tablet on all of the top radio apps available. TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio. You can find these apps and more on our website at thevoiceofhealthradio.com. This is the Voice of Health with Dr. Robert Prather. Laughter is the best medicine.
One trainer put me on the no-carb, the Atkins. They said after a week you won't have any carb cravings. I felt lied to. I had cravings. When you drive by a bakery and you jump out of a moving vehicle, that's a craving. I had hallucinations. I thought Dr. Phil was on my front lawn. John, come out here and exercise. You can't be big if your lifestyle won't allow it. Get off my lawn! Unless you have donuts. Every time the doorbell rang, I thought it was pizza. Come to save me.
Are you frustrated by not getting to the root cause of your health issue? Are you tired of not knowing why you're always fatigued? Are you wanting to say no to toxic drugs? Have you lost hope? Are you just tired of being sick and tired? At the Prather Practice, we want you to know that we have the answers for you. We offer the alternative to the disease care model. We are the drug-free model to health and wellness. At the Prather Practice, we look for the underlying cause of your health problem and not just the symptomatology. Through thorough diagnostics, we find your individual health blueprint for your treatment. Where the disease care model is symptom-based, the structure-function model we practice gets to the root of your health issue. The Prather Practice is the most comprehensive wellness center in the Midwest. Our integrated practice offers you the most treatment options to restore your health and your hope. Learn more about the Prather Practice by calling 317-848-8048 or learn more on our website at thevoiceofhealthradio.com. I'm Lisa Prather, and you're listening to The Voice of Health with Dr. Robert Prather of the Prather Practice, where we get to the root cause of your health issue.
Well, 'tis the season for flu. We're going to be Scrooges today, unfortunately.
Talk about the bad stuff.
Well, we're going to talk now about preventing the flu, and I had talked about this is the first time I've gotten the flu in years.
Right, but I really very mild.
Mild. I had one really, you know, just one bad day.
Sure.
The things that we're going to talk about is how you treated me. So, first of all, can we prevent getting the flu? And, you know, why is the immune system so important?
Well, there's a couple of ways to approach any type of infection. Destroying it more of the medical type of model.
Mm-hmm.
We're a structure function office, and we're looking at homeostasis in the body. And a person who is in perfect health can catch the flu, deal with it, and hardly even notice that they even had it.
Mm-hmm.
So because the immune system is working so well, it responds to it, gets rid of it, and
they might not even know they had the flu.
They might even know that they had actually caught the flu.
Mm-hmm.
So it's because I'm sure, I mean, I haven't had the flu again, like I said, since high school.
Mm-hmm.
But I have, well, I mean, just yesterday I had three people that had flu.
That you were treating.
That mm-hmm. I was treating.
Mm-hmm.
Who were within a foot of me,
mm-hmm.
you know, as I was checking them out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they were sniffing and coughing, and I'm sure that they kind of transferred it over to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens every flu season. So my exposure level is extremely high.
Mm-hmm.
But does that mean that that I'm actually going to get all the symptoms and the flu and everything like that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, absolutely not. You know, because, you know, people... So it's how healthy are you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is really what you're looking at.
So let's talk about ways... that you find effective, you know, here at the Prather Practice to build the immune system.
Sure. Well, one of the things, of course, is to measure immune system. Oftentimes people aren't aware that they have a compromised immune system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the only way to really check that is to do diagnostic tests and find out what the immune system is doing. So blood test, is definitely the best way to see how effective, how well running your immune system is, and it's very easy to tell.
Are you looking at white blood cell count?
Yeah, it's white blood cells, the immunoglobulins. There's several different factors that you look at and see how well the immune system's working. And as we are working with people, we can see the immune system come up. Mm-hmm. And it's surprising if the definition of chronic fatigue is a poor functioning immune system, because you get really tired, you know, just things aren't working. So a healthy immune system really makes you feel a lot better. Mm-hmm. When people have a lowered immune system, they're tired, run down, they're sleepy, you know, they're just not thinking as well. If their immune system's at a working excellent at a high level, you know, there's just a lot more energy. So you feel better, and then your resistance to infections, cancer, a lot of things. How long you're going to live is one of the, you know, how well functioning your immune system is. It's one of the biggest indicators on how long you're going to live. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just being, and everyone is supposed to really get their, a thorough diagnostic check is also to check and see how your immune system's working.
At least once a year.
At least once a year. Mm-hmm. And this should be read by someone who is actually particular about it. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes when you go to disease specialists, you know, that's the normal type of healthcare system. Mm-hmm. They're not really looking at homeostasis, which is optimal health. What they're looking at on that is, do you have a disease right now? Mm-hmm. And
so you could have a compromised immune system they're not going to even address.
They're not even going to mention it to you. Mm-hmm. I've had many people who came in here and says, I don't know, doc. I've gone to five different doctors and told them I'm just really, really tired. Mm-hmm. And they'll give me an antidepressant, but there's nothing else that they really do for me. Mm-hmm. And I sit there and I look at the immune system. I says, well, you know, you're almost into chronic fatigue with your immune system, or you are into chronic fatigue with your immune system. Mm-hmm. They go, well, why wasn't that addressed or talked to me about? You know, because they're bringing in blood work that other people had already done. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was there telling them that there was a problem. But there was even a mention that there was an issue. And I said, well, because their disease, that's not their job.
Right.
They're not trained in it. They don't even know how to address it. They don't even worry about it. They're taught in medical school that's not something that is your business, and until they actually get a disease, you don't do anything with them. Mm-hmm. And it's much, much easier to fix something like that before you get the disease than getting the disease and then trying to deal with it.
Right. And save a lot of healthcare dollars, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, let's talk about ways to boost your immune system and how you do that here. I know diagnostics, find out if the immune system's compromised, how much the immune system's compromised, why the immune system's compromised.
Exactly. One of the biggest areas that you have to go through once we find a compromised immune system, they automatically do is I check on, I also do a hair analysis, and then I also do a GI stool kit. Mm-hmm. To find out if there's any infections in through the gut. You know, the two areas that where most immune systems are compromised are either in the respiratory system or in the digestive system. Mm-hmm. And 80% of the compromise actually occurs in the digestive system, where we talked about the Guillain-Barré, and that it's most likely a combination of the vaccination and a GI, mm-hmm. Chronic infection that kicks off Guillain-Barré. Well, checking on that beforehand, it's amazing how many people are carrying around infections in their gut. Mm-hmm. Campylobacter being one of them, and if you can get that under control, their general health improves.
Interesting.
So not only do you prevent possibility of developing Guillain-Barré, but you actually start to feel better.
Well, let's talk about the treatment, the natural approach, structure-function approach that we have. I know for me, you put me on homeopathic.
Correct.
Correct. Flu be gone. So what role can homeopathics play?
Well, interestingly enough, during the 1918 flu epidemic, where about, the information is between 3 and 10% of the world's population was killed during the, and that was also
the
in the United States, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
everybody knew someone who had died. Mm-hmm. And in the medical hospitals at the time, and of course we've improved quite a bit, but not that much with viruses. Mm-hmm. It was a 90% death rate, but within the homeopathic hospitals, it was less than 10%.
Wow.
And in China, when they have had some major problems with some of the different types of flus that have become a huge issue, mm-hmm. is that they found that really the medical pharmaceutical treatments were pretty ineffective, whereas the homeopathic herbals and a lot of the other things were much more effective mm-hmm. on doing that. So, you know, the rate of, you know, what works and what doesn't, going natural. And of course, one of the things we talked about was vitamin D mm-hmm. levels. Has a huge effect on whether you're going to get the flu. What are your levels of vitamin C, mm-hmm. B vitamins? Are you compromised in any of those areas? Because that will affect whether you get the flu or not. If you actually are trying to build up the immune system, there's different herbals that are excellent for doing that. And then there are also different herbals if you actually get the flu that are very well known to help to get rid of it quickly. Mm-hmm. For you, we see that homeopathics are extremely beneficial in getting rid of the symptoms of the flu much, much quicker than anything else. Mm-hmm. So, we just had one lady who came in not too long ago who had a full week of the flu. Mm-hmm. And we gave her a combination of homeopathics and herbals, and she said the next day she was feeling
so much better.
So much better. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of the herbals that is extremely well known for stopping the symptoms of flu is Lomatium disecutum, mm-hmm. along with some other herbals, can really make a huge difference on that.
Is that a liquid or
that's actually a pill.
A pill form. Okay.
Yeah, though you can get them sometimes in liquid forms too. But mm-hmm. those are all very, very effective along those lines and definitely different ways of working with it.
Now, do you too? You might get four people come in with the flu and their treatment
is all different.
Like for me, I needed the homeopathic.
The homeopathic worked great mm-hmm. for you.
Well, plus I do better with liquids or a little crunchy tablets I can chew.
Yeah, right.
And not
yeah.
the pills. And you yeah, know you that about
like,
me.
You don't like swallowing pills.
No.
And one of the things, of course, is finding that's the other thing with the structure function homeostasis type of there are one much many more options if you're mm-hmm. talking about treatments for the flu. I could actually sit down and name 100 mm-hmm. different products. So we have many more options than we have for the pharmaceutical. I'm very limited on that. They only have like 3 medications to help cut down on the flu without side effects. Mm-hmm. Because there are definite side effects.
Right.
With and the pharmaceuticals.
That's what's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're not harming the body.
Right.
Yeah. Well, up next, we'll tell you about the Caring Christmas Project that's going to be bringing joy to some very special children in Indianapolis this Christmas.
Never miss an episode of The Voice of Health so that you can stay informed and empowered about your health. Get a podcast of our show automatically delivered to you every week by signing up for our show on iTunes. You can find that link on our website at thevoiceofhealthradio.com. And don't forget, thevoiceofhealthradio.com has complete archives of all of our past episodes with an audio library of information to help you add more life to your years and more years to your life. This is The Voice of Health with Dr. Robert Prather. The Voice of Health Wellness Tip with Dr. Robert Prather of the Prather Practice. Dr. Prather, what makes your approach and emphasis on the thyroid unique?
We look at it structure functionally, where homeostasis is what is important. Mm-hmm. And homeostasis is a balance, and there's a balance in the thyroid that should be achieved, which you can determine. And the people who have a normally balanced thyroid homeostasis is probably less than 1%.
Wow.
Of the population. There are two systems that control the rest of the body. The nervous system, and then also the endocrine system. And as I tell the patients, those are the two things that we need to get fixed first. Mm. You have to have a proper functioning nervous system and a proper functioning endocrine system to be healthy. And the thyroid is sort of the workhorse of the endocrine system. And many of the problems that we see in patients, once we get the thyroid balanced out, a lot of the issues start to clear up. The people who come in here, often 80% of them have had their, because they felt that their thyroid was a problem.
Had them checked.
Had them checked, and they were told that they were normal when.
Why is that?
They're not doing the proper blood tests. They're not reading them correctly. Doctors aren't being specific enough on what the thyroid number should be. The American Thyroid Association has said that the numbers need to be much, much tighter than what they are. There's a different type of a evaluation. There's reference range, and then there's homeostasis. What is a perfect homeostasis? The labs aren't there to tell you what the blood work should be. Mm-hmm. They're just saying, of the people who come in here, 50% of them have this number. Reference range has nothing to do with where, you know, mm-hmm. you should be.
Right.
That's
I know
not
you
what
look way beyond them and right. tell people, you know, and they come in, well, my doctor said, you know, this right. was normal. And
yeah. I say, no, that's mm-hmm. that's not normal. I even find endocrinologists mm-hmm. Not reading lab tests properly mm-hmm. to really understand where that should be, because when we get people into homeostasis range, mm-hmm. their symptoms go away. That's where they go, oh, wow, I feel really great. All the different things that I was complaining about are all of a sudden now working properly, and that's because they are in the range that I tell them that they should be in.
Right.
Because those are the proper ranges that need to be there.
Schedule your appointment at the Prather Practice, 317-848-8048. That's 317-848-8048. Or learn more on our website at thevoiceofhealthradio.com. The Prather Practice, restoring hope.
Friends and relations, send salutations. Oh, as sure as the stars shine above.
You're listening to The Voice of Health with Dr. Robert Prather of The Prather Practice, where our mission is restoring hope to our patients. Well, here at the Prather Practice during the holiday season, we like to partner with local groups. And we're going to partner this year, 2016, with the Caring Christmas Project. We have Angel here. Welcome, Angel.
Hey, thanks.
You have a perfect name for the Christmas season.
That's sweet.
And Angel, we've known you a long time. You've been coming to the Prather Practice
for many, many years.
Many years. And we always appreciate your smiling face, and we're real excited to work with you in collaboration on this Caring Christmas Project, because it's local and you're working with the IPS schools. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit of how the Caring Christmas Project began.
The Caring Christmas Project began in 2012, and it actually began with a conversation with a social worker that I had. The social worker was from Stephen Foster Elementary School, and I had called her and asked her if her students had a need for help at Christmas. And she said yes, that their school had a great need for that. And then I asked her if she knew of any other schools that also had that same need. Mm-hmm. And she said yes. So that year, in 2012, the Caring Christmas Project began and helped almost 300 kids.
Wow, the first year.
From three different IPS elementary schools. They were the Stephen Foster Elementary, Wendell Phillips Elementary, and William Penn Elementary schools. Mm,
that's wonderful. So tell us how it's progressed now, in 2016. Do you have more schools involved and more students?
Yes. This year we're going to help 800 kids from 9 IPS schools.
That's wonderful.
And what we do is we give them, each child, student gets, and their siblings get Christmas presents or gifts and a Christmas stocking.
Wonderful.
Filled with lots of items that the churches usually do the stockings.
So you've been working with the social workers at each
right.
school. They know which kids. They give you a list of kids' names.
Yes.
Is that correct?
They give me the list, and it has their first name, their age, and their gender. And then from that, we create bags of toys. And if they're older kids, then it's gifts to help them.
And do I understand right, too, you were saying that these go to the parents of the kids to give
right.
them?
Right. So we fill the bags, deliver all the bags to each school, and then the schools call the parents and have them come and pick up the bags of Christmas presents. They take them home, they wrap them, and they give them as their gifts to the kids.
That's wonderful. So what does the Caring Christmas Project do each year?
Okay, each year we collect funds from businesses and individuals, and we take and purchase toys and Christmas presents with those funds, and then we pass out Christmas stockings to churches, and the churches take the stockings, fill them up with items that the students will need, hats, gloves, toothpaste, toothbrush, small snacks, small toys, small puzzles, small books, just a huge range of things that they can be filled up with. So that even school supplies, just different items so that the kids have things for the next, you know, school.
It reminded me a lot of when we've done this before in the international level as Samaritan's Purse.
Right, right.
So
it's
very
same.
Similar.
Yeah, very similar. Same item.
And these children are literally next door
right.
in our community.
And they have huge needs that IPS kids do. So that's why it was started, because we wanted to improve the lives of the kids in Indianapolis, as well as kids around the world, too.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So how can people help with the Caring Christmas Project 2016 if they want to get involved?
If they want to get involved with the Caring Christmas Project, they can contact me via my email, which is Angel Moed, A-N-G-E-L-M-O-E-D, at ymail.com. And then I can get them the information to if they want to donate either for the stockings or for the presents.
I'm real excited. We have our 20 stockings here at the Prather Practice. So if you're interested, if you're a patient here or near 91st and Meridian, you can drop off any of those items here. If you want to pick up a stocking and do that as a family, you can do that also. We have 20 stockings here. And when would they need those? When do we need the items by? What date?
We have to have all the items back by Friday, December 9th.
Okay. Wonderful. Is there anything else you want to say about the Caring Christmas Project, Angel?
The Caring Christmas Project, we will be collecting funds for the toys and the stockings for the next 3 weeks. And all of the 100% of the funds go directly back to the students and their siblings. And we are doing families with this. So if the student is at the school, then we're including all their siblings.
That's wonderful.
For their Christmas, you know, so that the whole family is being helped, not just the one student from the school.
Didn't you tell me that, too, that Indiana Pacers are involved in this
yes,
project?
Yes, the Indiana Pacers donate toys that for the kids, too.
That's
wonderful. And as well as they do for many of the projects in Indianapolis. So they're really huge, generous people.
Well, thank you, Angel, for paying it forward, you know,
thank
here
you.
In the community. And you had an idea, and you... What Steve Harvey says, you jumped.
Yes, way off. Way off the cliff. But that's okay.
That's
but
great.
Many, many wonderful people help every year with this project. Many people through the churches and then businesses and individuals, you know, all donate and make this project happen.
Around 800 children it's going to help and service and their families. Okay, and again, this is called the Caring Christmas Project 2016 to help the children of IPS schools. And if you want to find out more information or give donation or give items, you can email Angel at Angel, A-N-G-E-L, Moed, M-O-E-D, at ymail.com. Thank you, Angel.
Thank you so much.
The Prather Practice is located at 8902 North Meridian Street on the north side of Indianapolis, just south of the I-465 loop. If we can help you to achieve better health, we'd love to hear from you. Connect with our office at 317-848-8048. That's 317-848-8048. Join us again here next week or anytime on our website at thevoiceofhealthradio.com for The Voice of Health with Dr. Robert Prather. The Prather Plan Weight Loss Program is safe, comprehensive, medically supervised, and designed just for you. Forget the trendy diets and instead start with a roadmap that actually resets your body's metabolism for optimal fat burning and increased energy. The Prather Plan has 6, 10, or 14-week programs with a proven record of success and with guaranteed weight loss. The Prather Plan is an individualized program that is tailored to your needs to create healthy new habits in your life. You'll receive support from a certified health counselor, a nutritionist, and an exercise physiologist for maximum results. Many weight loss programs can include unhealthy loss of muscle or organ weight. We target your ideal body fat percentage so you can lose body fat in a healthy way where the pounds stay off. Contact the Prather Practice today to schedule a consultation and create a healthier you. 317-848-8048 or on the web at thevoiceofhealthradio.com. The Prather Practice. Restoring hope.